Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premiere Networks on Saturday, May 28th, 2016. This is episode 1291. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by Varidesk. Varidesk easily converts your existing desk or cubicle into a standing desk, so you can switch between sitting and standing to stay fit and active at work. Learn more at Varidesk.com. That's V-A-R-I-D-E-S-K.com. And by ZipRecruiter. Are you hiring? With ZipRecruiter.com, you can post to 100-plus job sites, including social networks, all with a single click. Screen, rate, and hire the right candidates fast. Try ZipRecruiter with a free 4-day trial now at ZipRecruiter.com/tech guy. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Time to talk about computers and the internet and home theater and digital photography and smartphones and smart watches. And let's see, what else? Digital photography. Did I mention that? Our home theater guru's coming up, Scott Wilkinson, about half an hour from right now. Virtual reality, headgear. 888-ASK-LEO, that's the phone number. 888-827-5536. That's toll-free in the U.S. or Canada. So if you're listening on the radio, no problem. If you are not listening on the radio, you're listening on the internet, and you're outside the U.S. and Canada, you can also reach us via Skype. And we love getting those calls from people all over the world. It's so much fun. You just need to know 1-888-827-5536. That's the phone number. Use Skype out. It shouldn't cost you anything. Let's see here. 2016 study, Pew Research Center. I like to talk about these studies because Pew does a bunch of interesting studies. In particular, their studies of internet and the American life. Newest study, 6 in 10 Americans get their news from social media. 18% do so often. 26% sometimes. Only 38% of the whole population never get news from social media. So 62% get news on social media at some point or other. And that's actually surprisingly low. That means those 38% don't use Twitter, Facebook. they don't look at it. Because how do you not get news from it when you see it? That's, you know, when Prince passed away, where was I? I saw it on Twitter first, of course. Of course, I'm on Twitter all the time. You know, I'm always looking at Twitter, so maybe that's just me. It's part of an ongoing examination of social media and news. They analyze the scope and characteristics of social media news consumers across 9 sites. Number one, not what you say. You think Facebook, right? No, Reddit. What? Actually, it's a little confusing. This number is the percent of people who use a site who get news from the site. And Redditors get 70% of them get their news from Reddit. Reddit's a little more news focused, you know, especially depends what Reddit subgroups you follow, but it's I get a lot of news from Reddit. Then Facebook, then Twitter, then Tumblr, then Instagram, YouTube. Instagram, what kind of news you get on Instagram? LinkedIn, Snapchat. I think Snapchat probably an up and comer, right? All the candidates are using Snapchat to get their word, to get their messages across. Actually, maybe not all the candidates. Mr. Trump uses Twitter very effectively. Less so Facebook, and I don't think he's on Snapchat. Facebook, you know, reaches almost everywhere. 67% of U.S. adults. So it makes sense. It really makes sense that if it's 67% of U.S. adults read it, that 62% get some news from social media. That makes sense. Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube news users most likely to happen upon news online. So Instagram, 65% of them are doing other stuff, and then they stumble on news. Okay. I wonder if that's the best place for us to get our news. Maybe it is, maybe it isn't. I'm not saying it's not. After all, if you follow news sites, even if you're following mainstream news sites that kind of pride themselves on their objectivity, aren't you really, you're getting a carefully edited, curated message, what the editors of the news organization think is important, with the best of intentions. I'm not saying they're trying to slant things. If you follow news on Twitter and Facebook, you're following what, well, this is an interesting question. On Twitter, for sure, you're following what people think is interesting, right? Because Twitter doesn't do any curation. They just, whatever, it just spews it out. Maybe not quite the case on Facebook. Lately, we've heard that Facebook is perhaps carefully molding what you see. Certainly in the trending topics, there are editors there. And we know that Facebook uses what we call the algorithm. The algorithm, in my day, was a benign word, a good thing, a technique to solve a problem, whether it was in math or programming a computer. An algorithm was a good thing. Now it's a bad thing. They're using an algorithm. A computer is deciding what's important. You see, Facebook and Microsoft are laying a giant sub-Atlantic cable across the middle of the Atlantic to connect Virginia, where a lot of big data centers are in Virginia, to Spain. 6,600 kilometers of ocean. And get the speed of this. What do you have, you know, at your internet? Your download speed might be 10 megabits, 20 megabits. If you have fast connection, maybe 100 megabits. This is 160 terabits, 160 trillion bits of information per second across this cable. Wow. Wow. Google has two of them to go to Japan. Then there's one from the Google owns from the U.S. to Brazil. Wow. Usually these guys, in the past, these guys have relied on the telecom companies, you know, AT&T and people like that, to string their cables to create the big back, they call them backbones of internet data across the country and across the oceans. Now they're doing their own thing. And that's because they have to pump so much information across those networks. It's mind-boggling. More than two-thirds of the digital data moving across the Atlantic these days, two-thirds are on networks owned by Google and Microsoft and Facebook and their ilk. Used to be just 10% a few years ago. They're getting in the business, the data business. Big story in my neck of the woods. Billionaire Peter Thiel, he was one of the Facebook founders and created a startup venture fund. If you saw The Social Network, you saw he was the first investor in Facebook. Very well-known investor. Apparently, he's investing in something else, too. He's been funding Hulk Hogan's lawsuit against an internet site called Gawker. Hogan won a lawsuit for $140 million against Gawker, which was a gossip site. I say was because when this lawsuit started, they kind of got out of the business. Thiel apparently has an axe to grind against Gawker and has ever since been spending up to $40 million funding these lawsuits. Others, too, apparently, not just Hulk Hogan's. And this is a tough one for journalists because we believe it's really tough because pretty much we all hate Gawker because they just go beyond the pale. I mean, they cross the line, the unspoken gentleman's agreement. Not to publish stuff about personal lives. And they loved doing that. But on the other hand, there is this thing called the First Amendment. And it's a little scary to think that if you're a billionaire, you can fund, you know, lawsuits against journalistic enterprises to put them out of business because you don't like what they say. That's scary, too. I don't know where I come down on this. On the one hand, I'm thrilled to see Gawker take a hit. Reprehensible site that, you know, just really there was no excuse for. You know, worse than the National Enquirer. Just terrible, terrible sight. And yet, you can't shut down the National Enquirer either. They have the right, to, unless they lie, right? If they lie, that's all bets are off. If they say something untrue, you can go after them. Although, most people don't. because it just causes, it's called the Streisand effect. It just causes more, calls more attention to the story. If you just let it go, it fades away. So most Hollywood celebrities just go, oh, there they go again. Peter Thiel decided to take arms against the Sea of Troubles. It's a chilling effect, though. If billionaires don't like what you're saying, are they going to sue you, put you out of business? 8888-ASK-LEO. We're going to talk high tech with you. Why don't we do that? That's more interesting. Give me a ring. Let's talk right after this. Yeah, didn't Hooli's CEO said, let's delete those bad stories about me. You know, you don't want that, right? Leo Laporte, the tech guy, entering the ring of tech fire. 8888-ASK. Leo, Kim Schaffer is here. She has been lining up phone calls so we can answer and help people bit by bit, inch by inch, make their way through the tech landscape towards that holy grail of tech nirvana. I hope it's not a mirage. It might be. It seems to be shimmering a little bit. Doesn't seem very solid, very real. What would tech nirvana be? Everything just works. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it does what
but
you expect.
You'd have no radio show.
Yeah, I know. Or tech nirvana be very bad for my business. No, I wouldn't mind that. Don't you wish it did? Just things just worked out of the box.
Yes, I do.
They did what they said they would do and didn't break at the most inopportune moments.
Didn't give you the blue screen of death.
Yeah, tech nirvana. I live in this world. Imagine how it is for me, right? Because a normal person, they got one or two pieces of technology. They maybe set one up every year. I'm doing it every day. Stuff breaks on me every day, yeah. Constantly.
But we call you a guinea pig.
I'm a guinea pig. Well, maybe that's one name for it. Sucker might be another one. Anyway, let me put my nerd glasses on, and we're going to take some calls. Who should I start with?
Oh, you're going to help Pedro block certain websites from his kids.
Oh, no, Pedro. The kids are getting in trouble, huh? Pedro from the Bronx. Hi, Pedro.
Hey, Leo. How you doing?
I'm great. How you doing?
I'm good. How's Petaluma doing?
It's 84 degrees. It's a beautiful day in Petaluma.
I bet.
How's things in the Bronx?
Pretty hot.
Why do they call it the Bronx?
I have no idea.
You don't say the Manhattan, the Queens.
I really don't know.
The Bronx. It is, though, the Bronx. Yeah.
I guess it's very unique, the Bronx.
Yeah.
Very unique place.
I like the Bronx. I'm going to say I like Bronx, but that sounds so wrong. I like the Bronx. What can I do for you?
Okay, I recently saw you talk about OpenDNS, and
yes.
I created an account at OpenDNS, and it doesn't seem to be working for me. I tried it, I did everything.
So here's the key on the OpenDNS. So I love OpenDNS. You're trying to protect your kids.
True.
Mm-hmm. And OpenDNS, so to understand what OpenDNS does, you have to kind of understand a little bit about how the internet works. The internet is, you know, this vast place where everything on the internet, including your computer, your buddy's network, Yahoo, they all have a unique address. I'm actually running out of these addresses. The addresses are expressed as four numbers ranging from 1 to 255. That's
okay.
So you've seen those internet addresses, 198.168.1.1. That's an internet address. The dots separate each of those numbers.
Okay.
And there's enough digits in there for us to have, lots of stuff, but that's why we're running out. Fortunately, your home, with all its devices, only has one number.
Okay.
That's the number your internet service provider gives you. And then everything that comes in there is coming through a router, right? The router's saying, because it has one, that's what a router does, it shares the internet. So you have one number, but when little Jimmy goes to a website, the router knows that little Jimmy's computer started that conversation. And so when the rest of that site comes in, he says, the router goes, oh, that goes to Jimmy's computer. Oh, that one, that goes to Pedro's computer. So there's, or that, oh, that's to mom's phone, that kind of thing. That's what a router does. So everything has a unique number, but of course, numbers are hard to remember. So they created a really smart thing. They created basically a phone book where everything has a name, Yahoo.com. Yahoo.com, Google.com, but the name translates to a number, and the number is translated by the domain name system. It's just a big phone book. So your internet service provider has one of those phone books. They have their own DNS, domain name system, server. And when you go to a website, yahoo.com, your browser, first it says to the computer, do you know where that is? What's the number? And if your computer's been there recently, it'll be in its cache, so the browser will get that number from the computer. If the router knows, it'll say, oh, yeah, little Jimmy was there. Pedro wants to go there. Oh, that's just where it is. But if neither of them know, it goes on up to your internet service provider. If your internet service provider doesn't know, it goes up to his internet service provider, and finally all the way up to the 13 main domain name servers. They're spread all over the world, and those are the official servers. They have the official phone book, and then it propagates down. And the reason for that is so they don't have to be bugged all the time. Right? The router knows that. So you don't have to go to use your internet service provider. That information, where the DNS server is stored in several places, and this might be what's going on. Your router is the best place to put it. The router should say, and the router, by the way, gets that information from your internet service provider. So it goes out to Roadrunner or Comcast or whoever and says, what's your DNS address? And you'll see that in your router's settings. They'll have an address from your internet service provider. That's the one you replace if you follow the instructions at OpenDNS. You went to your router settings and you put in their server instead. And I'll tell you why that's a good thing to do. It changes the phone book. Unfortunately, if little Jimmy has instructions about what router to use on his phone or his computer, it will override what's on your router. So you have to make sure all the computers inside the router, inside your network, are using automatic configuration, that they don't have their own personal settings. And furthermore, if little Jimmy is over the age of 13, he'll have figured out how to change those settings. So you may need to lock him down with a password so that, you know, those settings can't be changed. And say, this is automatic. Go to ask the router. Ask your dad. Do you want to go to the internet? Ask your router. And the router then knows, oh, don't use the phone book offered by the ISP. Use this special phone book from OpenDNS, because that's the one that says, oh, yeah, here's the instructions that Pedro gave us about what Jimmy can see. Let's make sure that he doesn't go to those sites. That's how they do it. They change the phone book. It's a special phone book. So
is this a practice that I have to change over? Because I have an Apple router.
That's fine. You should set it in your router, because everything in your house is going to use that router. But you also then have to make sure go to the phones and the tablets and the computers in your family, especially your kids. This is, by the way, a way you can get around it is you don't have to use it. You can use whatever you want in your computer. But your kids, you want to make sure that they're locked down to use automatic configuration. They don't have any information about the DNS server. They get it from the router. And that way, little Jimmy's using the safe phone book, not Daddy's phone book. Not Daddy's little black book, because that one's got all... All right, you get what I'm saying?
Yes, sir.
All right. Thank you for the call. It's a great service. They have a free service. A lot of schools and businesses use it, and there's a paid service to opendns.com. And, you know, they do have instructions there, so you can follow them. It's a very clever idea. It's probably a better way than running blocking software on little Jimmy's computer, because little Jimmy, it doesn't take long before little Jimmy notices it. He can't do everything he wants to do on the internet, and then he figures out how to get around that. There's sites even created by other teenagers saying, okay, here's how you get around that. But if you lock down the internet settings on his computer, you make it password protected, he can't, you know, he doesn't have administrative rights. He can't change it. Then he has to use the one on the router. And, of course, the router has to be locked down too, right? Until little Jimmy's friend Johnny comes in with his own phone and says, here, I'll hook you up, dude. Leah Laporte, the tech guy. More calls right after this. A lesson in how the internet works, boys and girls. Scott Wilkinson is here. He's our home theater guru and a singer. Mm-hmm. A little bit more toward the madrigal side than the EDM side, but anyway.
That's right. Yeah, got that right.
He's the host of our Home Theater Geeks podcast at twit.tv/HTG for Home Theater Geeks. Also the editor-in-chief of the ABS Forum at absforum.com. and joins us each week to talk about home theater. Still haven't pushed the button on my LG OLED. I'm waiting for that.
Uh-oh.
Waiting for that cheap one to come out.
Yeah, waiting for the B6.
The B6. I got a G6, but I don't want to. I can't afford a G6. I'm waiting for a B6.
Yep, yep. I think the pricing just came out on those too.
Somebody bought one. Somebody in our audience bought one. He said, "Get it." They're egging me on. these OLED screens.
I think there's $2,000 difference between them. I think the G6 is $8,000, the E6 is $6,000, and the B6 is $4,000. So it is a significant savings, and you're going to get the same picture quality, just a different design of the case and the bezel and stuff like that, which I don't care about. I could care less. I'm watching TV in the dark, so I don't even see it.
I don't want a fancy bezel. I have a curved TV. I hate it. Hates it. So what's up in the world of home theater?
Well, there's bunches of stuff. Last week I attended, there's an organization called SMPTE. We talk about them sometime, the Society of Motion Picture and Television Engineers. And they have different chapters in different parts of the country. And there's one in Hollywood, of course, probably the biggest chapter. And last week they held a meeting about VR, virtual reality, and augmented reality, AR. And this is now an up and coming thing for cinematographers. And I've always wondered how can you make a movie in VR? Because you really need to focus your attention on a story that the filmmaker's trying to tell. And yet, if you can look around and up and down and all around, how do you focus on the story? Well, it's such a brave new world. Nobody really knows the answer. One of the things that was said at this meeting was, go out and buy a VR camera. And they can be had pretty cheap, you know.
Yeah, I have a $350 Ricoh Theta S, which I recommend.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
They're down to maybe $200, yeah. $400, $600.
Yeah.
And they said, this guy, one of the presenters, said to this huge audience of cinematographers and engineers, he said, go buy one of these things and just experiment with it. That's the stage we're at right now.
Yeah.
Is we're just trying all kinds of different things, and you just have to and see what works and what doesn't, because we don't really know.
We don't know.
So it was very interesting.
There is an analog, and you and I have some benefit of being the old guys because we've seen it all, right?
Maybe
10, 15, 20 years ago, there was a move towards this kind of non-standard form of fiction where you write your own ending, you know, kind of based on adventure games.
Right, story branching.
Yeah, and it failed miserably because it turned out what people want is, the whole point of going to a movie or listening to a story or reading a book is you want the author to take you on a journey, we sometimes call it a story arc, and that's the point, is that you want to go on a journey. And so it's possible that this 360-degree immersive video, which I prefer to use over VR, this idea of it's happening all around you, could be another one of those where, no, tell me what to look at. I mean, that's what a director does when they make a movie.
Now, on the other hand, another of the presenters said, look, humans naturally focus on
that's life, right?
On something, which is life.
In life, nobody's telling us a story. It just happens.
Well, true. But he said that his research had indicated that when you're telling a story in VR or 360 video,
let's say immersive video, because
immersive video. Okay, yeah. We'll say that. Then, you know, you naturally, humans will naturally start to focus on the important thing that's going on.
Yeah.
So there was one company that did an immersive video of Paul McCartney.
Yeah.
In his studio. And you could look all around and see the drums over here and the keyboards over there.
I've seen it. I've seen that one, yeah.
Oh, you have? Okay. We only saw it in...
Was it a studio or was it a concert? Because maybe I'm confused.
No, it was a studio.
Okay, so I've seen a Paul McCartney concert from the point of view of, like, sitting on his piano. And that's kind of... and that's... You know what? For a concert, that's good.
That's pretty good. Yeah, exactly.
Because now you're in the concert, especially, and this is a harder thing to do if the audio... reflects where you're looking, you know. So you're
well. That's hard
to do.
True.
Yeah,
Yeah, then you need some sort of head tracking,
right?
So that the audio doesn't kind of shift around with you.
Yeah,
and that
they're working on that,
weird.
But it's a way. Yeah. It's difficult.
One interesting thing was they said if you shoot something live action with one of these spherical cameras, you only have that one perspective. But if you do it with CGI, computer generated imagery, you can have the person's perspective change as they move around,
right,
with head tracking. So I thought that was very interesting.
You know, there's a wonderful YouTube video. If you have it, by the way, it's easy to kind of find out what this is like by getting an inexpensive device like Google Cardboard. Many of you received one from in the New York Times was sending them out to subscribers. This one came in my Sunday Times. Google's giving them out. If you search for Google Cardboard, there's vendors. You can buy them for 10, 15 bucks. And then you have to have a smartphone with the software on. But you can put, and it's Android or iOS, and you put the phone in. And there's a really good YouTube video that works with this. It's the Jungle Book. You get to be Mowgli. So Mowgli's the human character in King Louis's giant kind of
castle,
yeah, in the jungle. And the whole scene plays out, the song plays out, but you're Mowgli looking around. Of course, as you say, when they create these in CGI, these computer-generated worlds, it's by its very nature 3D. So it's a fairly simple thing for them to give you a immersive experience in there. That was cool. It's not a storytelling thing. It's experiential. It's about experience. Maybe that's the difference, is that we won't go there for stories. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Although this Paul McCartney thing was pretty cool because he was in his studio telling a story about how he wrote a song on a mandolin that he happened to find in some shop. And then he said he was going to, then I'm going to shoot a movie with Natalie Portman, who I'm friends with. So they told that story.
That's cool.
And it was very cool. Yeah, it was very cool.
You can still have a storyteller telling a story, but you're there with them. And that's what's, it's immersive in the sense that you're actually in the environment. You know, journalists have been playing with this. That's why the New York Times sent it out. And the challenge for that is, if you're the filmmaker, you're either in the movie, which journalists don't like to be, right? They don't want to be part of the story because that distorts it. Or worse, you have to say to they were doing a piece on children displaced by war. Mm-hmm. And you have to say, okay, kid, give me 30 seconds to get out of the room. And then you do whatever you would do naturally. And that's weird, too. Right?
Yeah, it is.
So it's a challenge. This is all new stuff. And yet for the end user, the experience is fascinating and exciting. And one thing we do know, it's great for gaming.
Well, yes, absolutely.
Yeah. We have a VR setup. We have another separate studio set up with a large space because the HTC Vive uses that. And we bring people in there. Anybody who comes by the studio, if they want, we set them up. And that just blows their mind.
Well, and you have to have a very powerful computer in order to do that well.
We built a $5,000 computer just for that. Scott Wilkinson, he's our home theater geek, and we love him. twit.tv/HTG if you want to watch his podcast, avsforum.com to read his articles. And, of course, he joins us here every week. Thank you, Scott.
My pleasure.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Yeah, it's really interesting. You got to experience it to really understand what it's all about. Did you get a chance to play with it at all?
I didn't. They didn't have any, you know, gear things or anything there at the meeting. What we saw was what's called epirectangular projections, which is basically taking the spherical image and mapping it onto a flat screen. It's like a Mercator projection.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I've seen those, yeah.
Right?
But that's not
It looks
the
really
experience.
Weird. Yeah, no, it's not the
experience
at all.
Yeah.
Well, but it's the only thing they could do under those particular
They could have given everybody. Of course, the problem is the cardboard's cheap, but you have to then have a $1,000 smartphone. So.
Yeah.
I just got my Gear VR for my Samsung. I'm really sold on this. I think it's a very interesting.
Well, I'm starting to come around. I was pretty
Well, I don't think for movies. It's got to be a different it's a different medium for different stuff.
Yeah, exactly. Not movies, but I'm thinking maybe not games either because I'm not a gamer.
No, it's experiential. I think really that's the best way to describe it. It's an experience. So if you want to sit with Paul McCartney in his studio, it's the best way to do that.
Yeah, yeah. No, I totally agree. Now, how about this? So they mentioned this and now I've started to see billboards driving around LA roller coasters, real roller coasters at Six Flags or something like that.
That's a great way to throw up. Yeah.
Where you wear VR goggles on the roller coaster.
I know.
You know, it's like, what?
Yeah. I mean, if you go to Universal Tours and you do the, like, the Simpsons ride, you're not wearing helmets. In a way, that's even more disconcerting because they've got screens all around you.
Yeah.
But it's like you're wearing a helmet. And, man, we're not going anywhere, and I was ready to not throw up, die. I mean, I was scared to death. It was terrifying.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I'm fairly prone to motion sickness myself.
They show you the roller coaster. You're on the roller. No, no. There's stuff going on around you. The reason it works on the roller coaster is because you're feeling the real motion. But then, it's like Space Mountain, you know, where there stuff comes at you and things like that.
Yeah, I'm not sure I'll ever do that. But this Paul McCartney thing, or for example, another guy was there that I didn't get to mention on the air from Fox Labs, and they're doing real time sports.
Sports would be
great. Yeah,
they then did, you're in the did, game.
Yeah, they did the Masters golf tournament.
But it's a very different experience, and I think both have merit. If I'm watching a football game, I kind of want the director and the announcers to tell me what to look at, right?
Mm-hmm.
But Lisa loves to go to the football game where you're looking at what you want to look at. So I think that's intriguing. Hey, just help me real quick before we run out of time because we are running out of time. So it looks like the price is not much. So there's is this the right one? Oh, I need 4K UHD. Here we go. We're narrowing it down. 4K UHD, and we want this year's. So we want OLED. Yep. 4K UHD OLED. All right.
2016.
Yeah. So there's the E6. The G6 is the top of the line, right?
Correct. Correct.
So the E6, 65-inch, 6,000. The C6, 65-inch, 6,000.
That's the curved. That's the curved one. You don't want that.
Oh, I don't want the curved. I want the...
You want the B6.
B6, 65-inch, 6,000.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought it was less than that.
Well,
wait a second.
I don't understand. Why is the B6 the same price as the E6?
Yeah, that's a very good question. On AVS Forum, my colleague Mark Henninger just posted the pricing. Let me just go quickly take a look at that.
No. This is a 65-5999 E6, and this is a 65 B6.
Oh, you're right. You're right.
5999. They're the same price.
Yeah, you're right. The 65 inch is 6
grand.
Can
you stick around for the top?
Yeah, sure. Happy to.
All right. Thank you, Scott. We need more cowbell. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888-ASK. Leo, Bob is in Burbank. Our next call of the day. Hey, Bob, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo.
Hey, Bob.
I got a chip on my shoulder. Can you help me?
Is it a CPU or a GPU?
A GPU. No, I'm just kidding.
what can I do? What can I do for you?
The problem I'm having is my computer will suddenly freeze up on me, and the only way I can unfreeze it is shut it off and turn it back on again.
So a couple of things about freezing. Sometimes we mistake a non-responsive mouse and keyboard for freezing. So look for other clues that the computer has actually stopped performing. For instance, turn on the second times on your clock, right? So that if the seconds keep moving, then, I've lost mouse and keyboard, but I haven't lost the computer. You know what I'm saying?
No, the clock has stopped, too.
Everything stopped. Yeah, if you don't have seconds, you'll have to wait a minute. But after about 10 minutes, it's the same time as when it froze.
Right.
Yes.
Right.
So that means the computer has halted. And processors halt for a variety of reasons. It's still displaying on the screen, so the computer itself has not, you know, blown up. Mm-hmm. But the processors stop processing. It's a good idea to wait, and I'll tell you why. Sometimes the processor gets busy, and the screen, updating the screen or updating the clock should be a high priority, but maybe it's a lower priority than, I don't know, building an index of every file on the hard drive. Sometimes the processor gets confused or gets busy, and the computer becomes less responsive. The reason I mention this, you want to really make sure it's halted, because you don't want to pull the plug or reset a computer if it's actually doing something. The worst time to do it is if the computer got busy indexing the hard drive. It's reading, writing, reading, writing, reading, writing, but it's not doing anything on the screen. You think it's died. You turn it off or you unplug it. Reading, writing, it could be you could get it right in the middle of a write, in which case you're going to lose a lot of data. Your heart, it's not a physical.
That's not the problem.
Oh, I understand. No, I understand. I'm just going through this so people. I don't want people just kind of, oh, it stopped and pulling the plug. That's a really risky thing to do. You got to be patient and wait 10 minutes. Make sure nothing else is happening. The clock doesn't move for 10 minutes. Then you know it's halted. The processor is actually halted. Processor will halt for a number of reasons. Sometimes it's heat. It's locked up. Sometimes it's bad software. It's not often anymore. Usually it's a hardware error, though, if you're getting that kind of thing. And nowadays on a modern PC, it's almost always a hardware error. Usually in the past, software could do that. And so now it's an issue. When you unplug it and plug it back in, it works fine?
Yes, it does.
And how long does it work fine for?
It'll shut off on me like twice a week.
Yeah.
It's
almost certainly overheating.
Well, another thing it was doing is sometimes I turn it on, there'd be no cursor. And I found a way around that. What I do is I hit the Windows key and I hit the F4 key and I move my mouse around a lot. And after about 2 minutes, it shows up.
This is a troubled PC. Is it new?
it's 2 or 3 years old.
Okay.
It's a Dell. And I get a message on the machine about once a session, a message will flash on. It's only on there for 4 seconds, and it disappears. There isn't time for me to write it all down, but it says, reconnect your drive. Your file history was disconnected for too long.
Got it. All right. So, this could be a lot of problems. It could well be your hard drive. Have you tried, and I know this is a pain, so people put this off, rebuilding the PC in the sense of wiping the hard drive, reinstalling Windows and all your apps?
No.
Yeah. That's the next thing. If you call Dell, they would make you do that. That's the next thing to do. What we're trying to do is eliminate any software possibility, and I think it's going to be hardware. I think it's going to be a flaky hard drive or perhaps a hard drive connection that's failing. This is hard to diagnose because it doesn't happen consistently. Like if you said every time I run the browser, after 3.7 seconds it dies, then we'd know. But it's inconsistent. We call them intermittent problems. They're always difficult. Here's what I would do that would be a good kind of just general prophylactic is check and make sure you have the latest BIOS version. Go to Dell. Download the latest BIOS version. They update these at least yearly. So you probably, if you haven't ever done that, you're probably a couple years old.
Okay.
Sometimes that fixes everything, believe it or not. There's a little risk involved because if the computer freezes while you're updating the BIOS, then you're really unhappy. I don't think it will. Then you want to, I would probably back up your data, make sure your data is backed up. And then is it Windows 7, 8, 10? Which
is 10.
10. Windows 10, it has a nice recovery utility you can run that will get you back to zero. And I would try that. Did it start happening after the upgrade to Windows 10?
No, I had it with Windows 8 also. It happened when I got the Dell computer. My previous computers, it didn't happen.
Oh, so maybe it's just this machine. It's not normal. It shouldn't happen on any computer.
A Dell computer also, when he has the same problem.
Wow. Well, I use Dells all the time. It's not normal for a Dell or any PC. On the other hand, it's not unusual, but it means there's something seriously wrong with it. And unfortunately, it's way out of warranty. And even if it were, what Dell would tell you before they would even take a look at it is you got to wipe the drive and put Windows... Reinstall Windows 10. It's in the recovery. If you hit Windows key recovery and type recovery, you'll see there's a way to effectively wipe the drive and start over. That's the first thing I would do. Make sure you got the latest firmware, too, from Dell. And actually, while you're at it, make sure you got the latest drivers from Dell. couple of things after that, if it continues to happen, I would look at. One is the hard drive. The hard drive is connected to the motherboard. If that chip, that connector chip, is failing, that's not fixable. You have to get Dell to replace the motherboard or replace the computer. The hard drive itself may be having problems. Sometimes erasing and starting over will fix that. Sometimes it won't. And it may also be a power supply issue. Power supplies and hard drives are the two most common ways computers these days fail. I'm guessing that you have a bad hard drive interface on your motherboard. That's a big problem. So fix the obvious, easy stuff first. Cindy in Temecula. Hi, Cindy.
Good morning.
Good morning. So I am not a dash cam expert, but I refer everybody who asks about dash cams to a website called The Wire Cutter.
Okay.
And they have a dash cam review. They say the Zero Edge technology Z Edge Z3 is the best, but they have some others they recommend as well, including Cobra. But the nice thing about the Z3 is it's $100. Now, you want one forward and backward? Is that what you said? Or what?
Yes, but I don't want one, the backwards one, to be monitoring the traffic behind me. I want it to be monitoring the inside of the cab.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you might need two for that reason, but that's a great idea. So one that's facing out for accidents and one that's facing you for trouble. I have to defer. They're really good. And they have some that have go both directions as well. The Wire Cutter, thewirecutter.com. We'll put that on our website, techguylabs.com. La 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 la. Scotty Wilkinson is here to save my day because he's going to let me eat my shaker salad.
What's that?
My salad. I'm shaking it up.
It's a salad in a can?
Well, I make it.
Oh, I see. Oh,
I make it in a mason jar.
It's a mason jar.
I put the dressing in, and then you shake it up. You can eat it out of here, or you can pour it in a bowl.
That's pretty cool.
If you're one of them fancy types.
You know, I had a thought about that dash cam thing. Some of these VR cameras are basically two cameras, front and back.
Oh, that's true. That's the next stage, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they're all very wide angle lenses. But, you know, you put one of those on there and you would see forward and backward. How you would get that out and look at it, I don't know yet, but it was just something I thought.
That's the problem with these is they require a significant amount of stitching and post-processing.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. They talked about that a little bit too.
The Ricoh, though, is awesome. And it does have live out. If you can pass it through a Macintosh, you can actually watch it live, which is kind of
fun. Oh, huh. Yeah.
Anyway, take it away, Blue Jay.
Thank you so much.
I'll show you your time.
Ah, good. Excellent. Very excellent. We've been talking in the chat room about movies that had VR. For example, Brainstorm, which was Natalie Wood's last movie. And they had some VR stuff going on in that. And Lawnmower Man was another one. And these are like from the 80s. So they were very prescient. Marsworm also mentioned something kind of interesting that was mentioned at the SMPTE thing about VR, which is IMAX is testing having a theater in which everybody wears a VR headset. And that seems to me to be very strange, almost meta. You know, it's like you're in a theater, you're with a bunch of people, and you're all wearing these headsets. And I guess it's some sort of VR experience, immersive video experience. I would go to see that. I would go to experience that as something new and interesting. I can't imagine, but I have to find out where in fact they are doing that experimentation. Maybe I can get in. Pretty interesting stuff coming up here, I think. Let's see. Somebody asked me. I guess I can't get up back that far. Maybe I can. Oh, yeah, here it is. Red Zebra was asking about getting a TV, the perennial question, of course. Vizio, Sony, LG, Samsung has about $1,500 to $2,500 to spend. My recommendation, as always, is the Vizio P-Series. You know, for $2,000 for a 65-incher, Ultra HD resolution, HDR. It's really quite remarkable. Oh, a full array local dimming, full array with local dimming backlight, also very important, because all of the Samsung except the flagship and all of the Sony except the flagship have edge lighting, which I don't really like as much. I just don't like it as much because the screen uniformity isn't as good as with full array local dimming. And Vizio gives that to you in all of their TVs, every single one, even the ones below the P series, the M series, E series, and D series. And what's the difference, you say? Well, the M series might be getting HDR, but the E series certainly doesn't have it, nor does the D. The other big difference is the number of local dimming zones. The P series has 128, the M series has 64. And the E-Series, I think, has 32. And you want, the more zones you have, the better. That's a really important consideration because with a very few number of zones, you end up with, if you have a little tiny piece of brightness in an otherwise dark part of the image, the rest of that dark part of the image will be brighter than it should be because the LEDs behind there are trying to brighten up for that one little tiny piece, maybe a star, maybe some other little tiny piece of bright material. So the more zones you have, the easier it is for the LEDs behind that tiny little bright thing to brighten up without affecting the rest of that zone, that area. The Vizio Reference Series has 384 zones. So that's why the Reference Series is better even than the P Series. Also why it's more expensive, a lot more expensive. So that's... that's the answer to that. I think the 65-inch reference is $6,000 compared to the P series, which is $2,000. So that gives you an idea right there. The P series also has this cool Google Cast application, and it comes with a Android tablet, and you control the TV from the Android tablet, which is pretty cool, but it's new, and some people are going to react negatively to it. They already have. So that's something to keep in mind. sorry about that. Let's see here. Yes, Mike Heiss in the chat room noticed my Simpty t-shirt. In fact, I happen to be wearing my Simpty t-shirt today. iBookery, Tron. Now, that would be an interesting movie in immersive video, wouldn't it? I happen to like Tron, the original one, and Legacy, too. I wasn't as happy with Legacy as I wanted to be. I thought that it could have been a lot more than it was, but the original was pretty interesting. And also interesting, my sister worked on that movie. She was a low-level sort of secretarial-type person working with one of the companies that did the computer animation for Tron in the 80s. 1982, was it? Something like that. And so that was very interesting. Her name actually comes up in these very long credits towards the end. But doing that in immersive video, that'd be kind of cool. User 9478, in your opinion, who makes the best quality 4K UHD TVs, excluding OLEDs? Well, okay, if you're going to exclude OLEDs, then I'm going to have to say Vizio. If you want to spend more money, the top-of-the-line Samsung is excellent, really excellent. That's the current model is the KS9800. And Sony top of the line, the X940D, also superb, really, really good. But they're a heck of a lot more money than the Vizio. So, and those are both full array local dimming, which is why they are so good, really, in my opinion. The lower end, everything below that in Sony and Samsung line are edge lit. And I have to say, I don't like it as much. LG LCD TVs, I have never been a big fan of. Their OLEDs are fantastic, but that's how that goes. Red Zebra says, when I went to Best Buy and they didn't have it working, and then when they did, it had weird vertical lines on the left side. They think it was damaged when they damaged it when they installed it. Probably so. Now, I have heard another thing from another person in a Best Buy in New Mexico, I think, that there was a weird darkening in the center of the screen. So I'm looking into that. That was a little disturbing. So there you go.
Thank you, Scotty.
Yeah, look, Loquacious really liked the original Tron too.
Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk about computers. Well, not just computers either. The internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smart watches, the Internet of Things, you know, those little internet-connected devices that are starting to proliferate all over your house. VR, virtual reality, immersive video, all the new tech stuff, all the toys. But I like it because the toys are also, you know, changing our lives. It's fun. 8888-ASK-LEO, that's the phone number. 8888-ASK-LEO. If you have a question or a comment or a suggestion, I want to mention the website, too, because we put everything I talk about up there at techguylabs.com. So if you hear something and you're driving, don't worry. You don't have to write it down. You just remember techguylabs.com, and everything will be there. We divide the website up into show by show, and then within the show, hour by hour, and then within the hour, call or segment by segment. So you can really drill down to the part you want. And you can also leave your comments and suggestions, so you don't have to yell at the radio anymore. Just go and yell in there, techguylabs.com. And, of course, it's free. There's no sign up. Well, not of course. I know a lot of sites do that, but I don't want your email address. It's too much trouble. I don't want to spy on you. 8888-ASK-LEO. Mark in Pennsylvania is next. Hey, Mark.
Well, first of all, how do you know I was yelling at the radio?
I heard you all the way from Pennsylvania. Leo, you fool.
No, I wasn't thinking it was a fool, but the fellow that mentioned his machine was locking up. I wasn't sure where it was going. Then he said that somebody else's machine was doing the same thing.
Yeah.
Hybrid sleep.
Oh, that's Shut the worst.
Off.
Yeah.
Shut it off.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, 9 times out of 10, when something seems to be locking up, shut off hybrid sleep, shut off the hibernation, and restart the machine.
Very good point. I should always mention that. Sleeping a computer, it turns out to be a hard thing to do.
It is the worst working thing I've ever seen.
Yeah, it's pretty terrible.
They've left in it.
Yeah.
It's terrible. It is terrible.
Just turn off hibernation usually is sufficient. Hybrid sleep is kind of a weird middle ground that Microsoft introduced. And then there's sleep. Most computers can sleep okay. You know, you close the lid on the laptop, the screen goes off, and they go to a slightly lower power state. The problem is when they're really trying to save power, they go to what's called hibernation mode. And that means they save out the memory, the RAM, because RAM needs power, right? You really want to go low power. You save RAM out. Now you could turn everything off. You're basically shut off. It takes a while to save it out. Sometimes locks up the computer in that process. And then when you try to turn on the computer, it has to load that from the hard drive. That can be a problem. So,
but it's also shut off your mouse, too.
Yeah, it could do all sorts of nasty
things.
It's just a mess.
Yep.
So always do that
before you reinstall them.
Yes, thank you. You're absolutely right. I'm glad. I stand corrected. Turn off hibernation. If you're on a Windows 10 machine, turn off hybrid sleep. That was a terrible idea. The idea of hybrid sleep is it's sleeping, but it's still getting the email. It's doing stuff. You know, go in the power management and just turn everything off. Sleeping is about the only thing. That's safe, right? You would agree that that's safe?
Oh, I don't know. I turn them all off.
You just turn it off when you're done.
You don't have the burn-in anymore. You don't have the pinging on the hard drive.
Some of these computers can use 60-70 watts like a light bulb, and so it pains me to leave them on. But I guess you're right. It's probably just at least try that. Turn off all power management and see if that fixes the problem.
Yep. Hey, listen, have a great weekend.
Hey, thanks for the tip. I really appreciate it. See, that's what I call a good call. You call in, you help us all off. Help us everybody get it right. If you're having problems, absolutely something to turn off. And it's gotten worse, incidentally, because of the new chips. So if you have a really recent computer running Intel's 6th generation Skylake chips, Intel put a lot of new power management stuff in there. And it's taken a while for manufacturers to figure it out. I have a Microsoft Surface Book, which they've had the devil of the time getting working. It's running on the new Skylake processor. Same thing if you have a Surface Pro 4. And, man, are they having trouble with that. Just nothing's working right. It's all, you know, they finally pushed an update last month that fixed that problem. But it took them almost a year to get it right. And with all sorts of problems, waking up, going to sleep, close the lid, it wouldn't come back on. So some of that is just that these new processors doing stuff that it's taken them a while to figure out. 8888 Ask Leo. Let's see who's next here. It is Greg in Wisconsin. Hi, Greg.
Hey, Leo. How's it going?
It's great. How are you?
I'm okay, I guess, but I have a dilemma with my Samsung laptop.
Yes.
I pretty much only use it to watch Formula One races. So
you want it to work right now, don't you?
Yes, sir. And that's the problem. I get that yellow window that tells me to turn off the computer for an update to install.
Oh, right in the middle of the race.
And I'm in a big loop.
Oh, no.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, Windows 10?
No, I'm on 7 still. I'm assuming that's the problem.
I've seen it a lot with Windows 10. In fact, I was having that problem on this Surface Book. That was one of those problems I was talking about, which was just, a mess.
The laptop wants to upgrade Sunday night. I'm assuming that's probably part of what's going on.
Now,
I can do just to make it wait till after the race?
Is it trying to? Yes. Yes, you can. You go into the settings for updates, and you say manual. Manual update. Now, it's a good idea to have automatic updates, but for this particular case, manual. Just you have to remember to run that update after the race, okay?
Okay.
But, yeah, turn automatic updates off and have it manually updated. Generally not a setting I recommend, only because the critical updates are so important. Now, Microsoft is also
set up for the most important updates.
Good. While you're in there, turn off, and everybody should do this, recommended updates, and I'll tell you why. If you're not running Windows 10, if you're running Windows 7 or 8.1, one of the recommended updates is to replace your operating system with Windows 10.
Mm-hmm.
And it will do that automatically. Yeah, it will do that automatically, and that is a time you will miss the race.
This week is Monaco.
Now, how long is that race?
It's only an hour and a half.
Yeah, you'll miss the race. You'll miss the whole race. It's not like the Indy 500. You'll miss the whole race. The Indy 500, you'd only miss the first 400.
Right, I only missed the first 10 cautions.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, the cautions alone, you probably keep you in good shape. Oh, yeah, okay, no. Please, so you use your laptop to do that? You use your laptop to do that because these races aren't on broadcast, so you watch them on the internet.
Yes, sir. I watch it through that Stream Hunter, and then I use an HDMI to my TV.
Very cool. And what country's broadcasts are you watching?
England.
It's in English then. Yeah.
Yep. It's decent guys, and
the number one sport in the world. In terms of dollars, certainly, and we can't watch it here. Isn't that funny?
No, we get two live races a year if we're lucky.
I had a friend.
Thanks, Leo.
You're welcome. I had a friend, .com a millionaire, spent all his money following Formula One, traveling around, and now he's broke. But he enjoyed it. That's what counts. So let me emphasize, Microsoft has made this even more confusing. People have been very critical this week of Microsoft because they changed that box that says, hey, good news, your Windows 10 is downloaded and we scheduled an update for you. And there's only one way out of that box if you don't want the update. Now, I'm going to tell you how to do it the right way. Microsoft used to let you cancel by clicking the red X. Not anymore. And I don't think they're... Unlike a lot of people, I don't think this is a Microsoft being mean. I think it's them just not understanding normal people. So I'm gonna explain to you why Microsoft did that and what to do if you don't want Windows 10. I think Windows 10 is great. If you want it, far out. But if you don't want it or you don't want it during the race, stay tuned. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Tech Guy Podcast brought to you by those good folks at Veridesk. We are so excited. Our new studio, the planning is going on, and one of the things we've done, we're going to have Veridesks everywhere. I'm so excited. Why? Because for my staff and for me, as you know, I don't like to sit all day. I want to move around and stuff. And the Veridesk is great because it gives you the choice between a sitting or standing desk. It's not good to be sitting all day. And a lot of us have jobs where we just sit all day. Research by the Mayo Clinic shows it puts you at greater risk for all sorts of stuff. Obesity, increased blood pressure, high blood sugar. Get up. Get on up. But sometimes you just want to sit. Varidesk gives you both. Height-adjustable desks. They have a big variety. Makes it easy to switch. You can get the Varidesk that sits right on top of your existing desk or cubicle. That means you don't need boss approval. You could put it in your cubicle, turn it into a standing desk. There's no assembly, no installation, no boss approval. Now, I said once on the last time I did this ad, I said, and you could lift it with one finger. That's because it's spring-loaded and it's very balanced. So even if you put your monitor and your, you know, a picture of your loved ones on it or whatever, you can still lift it. But you do, because to make it safe, it's got double releases. So even though you could lift it with one finger, you do have to use both hands. Otherwise, you know, you want to make sure that it's really stable, and it is. You just use the handles on either side, and it goes up and down and up and down, even if you've got weight on it. 11 different height settings. They start as inexpensively as $175, and that includes free shipping in the continental United States. Lifehacker gave Varidesk one of their five best standing desks award. It's also been featured on Product Hunt and Gear Patrol. And you may have seen Varidesk and not known it because the Pied Piper offices, you know, the shiny new offices they got on the HBO show Silicon Valley, those are Varidesks. State of the art, man. State of the art. I want you to try it. We're going to have all Varidesks. The staff's thrilled. You will be thrilled, too. Go to Varidesk.com to learn more. Variedesk.com. And, it, you know, if somewhere in the form it says, did you hear about it? Just say, I heard it on the Tech Guy. That's fine. Or on Twit, whatever. I want them to know they're getting some value. You'll be getting some value. Varidesk. Variedesk.com. T-E-C-H in the R-O-C. In the U.S., I'll write a song. I really will. T-E-C-H in the U.S. It doesn't really work, does it? Leo Laporte. I like T-E-K in the USA. No, that doesn't work either. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888, ask Leo. So, let me say right up front, Windows 10 is great. I love Windows 10. Windows 8 was an abomination. Windows 8.1 barely fixed it. Windows 7 was great. You know, Microsoft has a reputation, I think earned, that every other version of Windows is good. Windows XP was fine. Windows Vista was terrible. Windows 7, which was created to fix Windows Vista, is great. Windows 8 and 8.1, which were designed to introduce the idea of tablet computing to a resolutely desktop-based user base, was a horrible flop. Windows 10, much like Windows 7, Windows fixing Vista, Windows 10 fixed 8 by making it basically back to the desktop operating system. But if you wanted to, you could turn on some tablet features. The start menu came back a little tiley, but at least it's there. They fixed a lot of it. And of course, what we don't talk about and don't see is the underlying heart of the operating system. We just have to take Microsoft's word for it that it's much improved. More secure, more reliable, et cetera, et cetera. So I have nothing against Windows 10. But on the other hand, if you don't want to go to Windows 10, you shouldn't have to go. I mean, it's your computer. If you want to keep, I wouldn't recommend sticking with XP for safety and just usability concerns. It's pretty old. But if you're using Windows 7 or Windows 8.1 and you're happy, and more importantly, your software works, you got everything works, no one should force you to go to Windows 10. Worse, no one should spring it on you. And that's what Microsoft's doing to people now. So they said, hey, we warned everybody. Come on. Really? We warned you. They've made Windows 10 a recommended update for people using Windows 7 and 8. Now, that's fine. It's recommend. I recommend it. But by default, the Windows update process installs recommended updates automatically. That's the default. So I don't have that. If you say, oh, Microsoft made Windows 10 recommended, I'd say, yeah, well, of course they did. No big deal. If you say Microsoft is automatically upgrading people to Windows 10 without their say-so, that's a different matter, and that's exactly what's happening. If you have if you have not changed the settings on your Windows 7 or 8.1 PC, unless it's seriously incompatible with your hardware, which it's not in most cases, you will be getting Windows 10. It's just going to happen. So one solution, don't turn off updates, really. You want your critical updates, but you could turn off recommended updates in the settings. That's not a bad idea. You're still going to get the pop-up. Hey, you want Windows 10? Hey. And for that, if you want to get rid of that, my friend Steve Gibson makes a great utility. It's small, it's fast, it's lightweight. It doesn't, have to stay on your system. You just run it once. It's called Never 10. Just Google Never 10, one word, NEVER10. It's free. What happens, you download it, it makes the registry changes Microsoft recommends to prevent this pop-up from ever bugging you. It also has an optional feature, which I recommend, to delete. See, what you don't know is behind the scenes, Microsoft's been downloading Windows 10 installer, which is several gigabytes of storage on your hard drive. It's been downloading that on your system and storing it there. So Steve's program also has a button that says delete the Windows 10 install files. That'll get you a few gigabytes, in some cases 8 gigabytes of storage back on your hard drive. That's a lot. Gigabytes. That's a lot. Here's the next piece of the story. The next chapter in the saga has started this past week. Microsoft changed the warning box that it gives you. So if you have recommended updates turned on, as many do, you have Windows 7 or 8.1, as many do, you'll see at some point, Microsoft will, behind the scenes, download Windows 10, and you'll see at some point a box that says the Windows 10 update has been scheduled. Because most people have it set that the updates don't happen instantly. They run in the middle of the night. So it will say something like, Sunday night at 2 a.m., we're going to update. And to be even creepier, the buttons on this box, there's a big upgrade button, which means upgrade right now. There's a button that where it would normally say cancel, that in fact doesn't say cancel, says upgrade later. So people look at that, and there's no apparent button to stop this, right? And then sometimes what they do is they click the X. They close that window. Any of those three options, you're just saying to Microsoft, yeah, I understand. I got it. You've scheduled the update. Go right ahead, okay? Very important. Closing the box used to stop it, cancel it, but that was a weird behavior. I don't understand why Microsoft had it do that, to be honest. This box is saying, we have scheduled an update. Closing it just puts the box away. The update has not been turned off. Very important. There is one and only one button on that whole box. If you see that box, tell your friends, you now know this. It says, click here, and it's kind of in little print below the schedule time. Click here to change the schedule or cancel the update. That's the one thing on that whole box you can click to stop it. Click here. You could also, by the way, go into your settings and turn that update off. Say, I don't want it. But most people use the way we use our computers. Yeah, there's a dial. Okay, fine, close it, get rid of it. And I think many people would assume, oh, yeah, I closed it, so it's not going to happen. No, it's already been scheduled. That's the point. That's why Microsoft justifies this behavior. A lot of people were very upset because Microsoft used to make that red X cancel box cancel the process. It doesn't do that anymore. But I'm kind of the opinion it never really should have done that. I think they should have a big cancel button somewhere on there that's very clear. If you don't press this cancel button, you will be updated. But most of us, the way we compute, there's a lot of stuff going on. We just kind of, yeah. So don't be surprised if tomorrow morning you get up and Windows 10 is on your PC. The next thing you'll see is a dialog box that says, here's the end user license agreement for Windows 10. Click agree or cancel. If you agree, you're done. You have Windows 10. And enjoy it. It's a wonderful operating system. If you cancel, if you don't agree to the user license, Microsoft will start to uninstall Windows 10 and roll you back to your previous operating system. Most of the time that works. Sometimes it doesn't. And then you're in the wonderful position of having a non-working computer. Thank you, Microsoft. This isn't how it should have happened. Microsoft deserves severe criticism for foisting this on people. I understood how it happened. They think they're helping. I'm helping. I'm making your life better. They're just clueless, right? Maybe they're not so clueless anymore. I think enough people have screamed and yelled that perhaps they're getting the message. My message to you is Windows 10 is great. No reason not to go to it. But if for any reason you don't want to, and that's completely a legitimate position, really important, closing that box doesn't stop it. You have to click where it says click here and cancel the upgrade. And then download Never 10 and it'll never happen again. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I've been everywhere, man. He's been everywhere, man. He's Johnny Jet. My gosh, man. That guy pays every fare, man. It goes from Alaska to California, everywhere around the world. He's been everywhere. Hi, Johnny Jet. I don't know.
Hello, Leo.
I ain't no Johnny Cash, that's for sure. But he is Johnny Jet, and every week he joins us with a travel tip. How to use technology to travel better. Website, apps. And it was so nice to see you. Johnny and his wife were up for the week. You stayed in beautiful Cavallo Point Inn in Sausalito, came to visit us. It was so nice to see you, Johnny.
Yes, it was nice to see you 2 days ago in the flesh. So now I'm in Connecticut, my home state.
This is a Memorial Day tradition for the Jet Clan.
You could always find me here, and I am here. And actually, I'm in my cousin's house where the Wi-Fi router is, so it's the strongest. So it looks like I'm in bed, but I'm really not.
He's sitting next to the Wi-Fi router. Well, you sound and look great. So what?
Okay, good.
Thank your cousin for the router. What are we going to talk about?
I will. So while I was actually on your set taping a new screensaver show tip, I had one. I gave the list of all these different websites and apps that I love, and one of them was called Stay Connected.
Yeah.
And Megan's like, oh, is that the app that allows you to tune into any TV when it's muted, you know, in an airport waiting room or wherever? I'm like, no, I didn't know there was an app that existed.
What?
So actually, I then went home and did some research, and sure enough, there's an app called Tunity, T-U-N-I-T-Y.
Megan knows everything. Wow. Wow.
And so if you're in a bar, an airport waiting room, a lounge, and there's the TV's on and it's muted, you download this app. It's free on Android and iOS. You have to be in pretty close range to scan the TV. I'm not sure exactly how many.
You point the camera at the TV.
You point it, open the app, and it has a little screen, and you sync it up. And it supports over 100 channels. I did it at Cavallo Point, so I did the local news in San Francisco.
Because a lot of times they have, like at the gym, they have the sound turned off, and you
exactly.
put the captions the, on. You know,
right? And you can't hear it. You want to hear it.
Yeah.
So this will allow you to hear it. Although, you know, I tried the local news in San Francisco. That did not work. Although then I changed the channel to CNN. Sure enough, that worked. That's
one
of the channels that's supported.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So, but there are some local channels that are supported, just not too many in San Francisco yet, but they're expanding. But I love it because, you know, you could be in a sports bar, you could be traveling, eating alone, and just sitting at the bar, and, you know, you just want to watch what's on the tube, but they don't have the sound on, and you can listen to it. Put your earbuds in though.
How's the synchronization? Is it pretty close?
It's actually really good, and there's actually some buttons to fine tune it.
Yeah.
So just in case it's off a little bit, like an old Godzilla movie or
right.
something, you can tune it.
That's Tunity, iOS or Android. They have both. I'm downloading this right away, especially for travelers. I'm often in the airport where they have a screen on. And you can't hear it, or it's on, but it's only if you sit under it that you can hear it. And I want to watch the news. I got nothing else to do.
For sure. Yeah. And on the flip side, by the way, I have a buddy who carries around a little clicker that
turns it off. That's
any
mean.
TV.
That's mean.
And he does it if he's in the lounge and it's really loud, the TV, and there's no one else there, which I kind of like. I was going to get one. It's called TV Be Gone.
Yeah. I remember when that came out. Yeah. That's so, mean. You're mean.
Yeah. All right. So now I got a website for you.
Yeah.
So this one is – everyone's always emailing me saying, hey, what's the best airline for long-haul flights in coach? And so, you know, most of the travel bloggers these days, they're flying business class because
right.
they earn so many freaking
right.
flyer miles. Airline is –
they don't know how the people have to travel.
Exactly. And, you know, and I'm sometimes guilty of that myself.
Well,
although
you
I
get upgrades.
Coach.
I've seen you get upgraded.
Oh, yeah. I flew coach yesterday from San Francisco to here. But anyway, so you go to Seat Guru. Actually, go into Google and type in Seat Guru long haul economy class comparison chart.
Oh.
Actually, all you have to do is type in Seat Guru long haul economy class, and it will show up. And anyway, what I really like about this chart is that it's only for economy class, and it will show you, you know, everything you need to know, what the seat pitch is, how wide it is, if it has power, which is especially important when you're traveling on these, you know, super long haul flights. You know, you expect the airline to have power ports. Some of them don't. So then you need to do your, you know, you need to go either get a backup battery or bring a power port your own.
This is so great. And you can sort it. So depending on what's most important to you.
Yep.
Like just, if the widest seats are in Asiana Airlines. Who knew that? You know, what kind of video? Like United on its Boeing 777 to Hawaii, no video. No laptop power. Wi-Fi, though. And a good seat pitch. So you just never know.
Wow. So it's important. I mean, because not all airlines or aircrafts are created equal. And I think I talk about this often. So, you know, if you fly a major airline like American, you look at their aircrafts between major cities. So I fly L.A., Miami often. So a lot of times they're flying either like crappy 737s or 57s, you know, but once in a while they fly the 777-300, which is, you know, the granddaddy of American. And not only is it much better in business and first, but coach is so much better as well.
Good to know. This is so very useful stuff.
I really like that.
Yeah. Well, you want to do a tip? You got some, we got some time. All right.
So, you know, everyone's traveling this year. They're heading out to Europe. It's, you know, the prices have been so cheap. So keep in mind that there's a lot of scams out there, and I've been taken before. So I learned the hard way. Before you go on these trips, do some research. Whatever country you're going to, you know, Google that country and the State Department advice. Also look on similar pages like Australia's State Department, Canada's, and United Kingdom's, and read their pages because they'll tell you about all the scams that are going on. One time, my buddies and I, we were in Budapest. We met some cute girls, and they're like, hey, you want to go get a drink? And my buddy's like, yeah, let's go to a bar. So they're like, let's go to this bar right here. We're like, okay. So we go into this bar. They order a round of, you know, just one round of drinks. And all of a sudden, the bill came, and it was 10 times what it should have been.
Yeah.
And they were shocked like we were. And they're like, they gave us $50. It was $350.
So bad. Oh.
Yeah. And my buddy's like, we just got scammed. I'm like, no, we didn't. Those girls were so sweet. We went back the next day. Staked out the place. Sure enough, those girls walked back in with two other guys, and we're like, don't go in there. But of course, the State Department, I then looked at the State Department's page, and it said, beware of these bars, these scams.
No kidding.
And there's all kinds of scams, not just this scam.
That's why it's helpful to look like I do, because if a cute girl ever says, let's go have a drink, I know it's a scam right away. It's like, oh,
this is when I was single, you know.
You're a good looking guy. You fell for it. I understand. Wow, that's an interesting scam.
Yeah.
I have to remind my son about this kind of stuff. He's been scammed many times now.
But there are so many. And I was in Europe, you know, recently, and I was with a bunch of travel writers. And one lady, she knew about all these different pickpockets and stuff. Sure enough, she came back. She goes, my wallet is gone. She was in a church. And it took one person just to bump into her, and it's gone. You got to really protect that.
I got to say, travel, don't be scared about this. I mean, these guys, you know, they're not going to knife you. But you just should know, you know, how to store your money and be careful about that, because there are some – it's just like the internet.
Although some places they will knife you, but not in Europe so much. But South America.
Oh, no. You know I was walking through Buenos Aires in midnight with my very expensive camera hanging off my thing, and a guy comes up and taps me, and I'm like scared. He says, dude, put away the camera. you're asking for trouble.
Yeah.
On the other hand, I felt safe. I didn't really feel scared, so –
And if you go to Brazil for the Olympics, if it even happens, you know, especially Brazil, I never wear any rings, anything flashy.
And leave all your mosquito netting the whole time. You'll
that's what you need.
You'll be safer. Johnny Jet, you'll find his website, johnnyjet.com. And boy, there's lots of great stuff there, including free travel newsletters that can get you amazing deals. He's always looking for those best deals on tickets. The airlines must hate you. Man,
the passengers
love
me. Passengers love me.
And follow him on Twitter. He's got some great Twitter lists at Johnny Jet, or on Instagram if you want to see the pictures. If you don't mind a little jealousy, because man, this guy goes some great places. Thank you, Johnny.
Thank you, Leo.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More to come right after this. I did get scammed, and you're right, Jono. I got scammed in New Orleans.
But for what?
Lisa knew. I kind of knew. The guy comes up. He says, I can tell you where you got them shoes. I said, no, you can't. He said, I will. If you give me $5, will you give me $5 if I tell you where you got them shoes?
That's an old one.
That's really an old one. I had never heard it before. I was a babe in the woods. But, it was worth it. And he polished them afterwards, so it was okay.
That's all right. That's I don't consider that a scam. That's more of a...
He says, you got them on your feet. And I went, oh. He says, that'd be $20. But then he cleans
them. Was it $20?
Well, he said five at first. It got increased. Anyway.
I wouldn't do the 20.
You know what? I gave him 20 because it was like, so what? It's cute. He's funny. He made it fun. He made it fun to be scammed. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888. Ask Leo. That's the phone number. Talking high tech with you. And Dan is on the line. From Lake Forest, California. You're next. Hi, Dan.
Hey, Leo, thanks for taking the call. I have a quick question about hearing aids. I remember you spoke once about them, and I didn't know that I needed them at that point, but now I've had a test, and I have mild hearing loss at higher frequencies and in conferences and stuff like that. So I was thinking of them. I had a check, and then people talked to me about them, like Starkey or these different ones, and I'm trying to research them on the internet, and you really can't find that much. They just say that they certainly do cost a lot.
They do cost a lot. They cost an awful lot, and hopefully your insurance will pay for it because they're thousands of dollars. But
not much insurance. But I was trying to research them, and they all talk about these great programs that they have and what they do, and then you read other reports and people say it's a bunch of malarkey.
I'll tell you what. So first of all, and I'm trying to get my mom to do this, people are funny about hearing aids. They don't, it's embarrassing, I guess. But boy, if you're getting a little hard of hearing as I am, and as many of people in my profession are, and many musicians are, you owe it to your family and friends to get hearing aids because it makes a big difference. And nowadays, they're not like the old ear trumpets. My gosh, you don't have a receiver in your pocket. They don't get your feedback. You know, it's not like grandpa's hearing aids, and you can't see them in many cases. I wear mine all the time. People don't know I'm wearing them because the little earpiece behind your ear is invisible, and it's just a little filament, a little wire that goes into your ear with a little speaker, right, and you can't see them. So what your might and reason this is appropriate for a tech show is what you might be calling about is how smart these hearing aids are. And let me tell you.
Yes, wow. I was going to ask you about that.
Yeah.
You know, I looked at them, and I have an Android phone. I noticed they write a lot of the apps that link with the phones for Apple. I'm not a fan of Apple as much as I am Android.
Yeah, so I use an Android phone with my Starkey Halos. The number of companies do these. So the idea is, and a good friend showed me this, and I was blown away. He had an iPhone. And the reason they worked with the iPhone a little bit better is because Apple actually made drivers, hearing aid drivers for these hearing aids. And they're a little less prevalent in the Android world, although I suspect now most of the same functionality is available for most of these. It certainly is for the Starkey Halos. What the phone does is so cool is, first of all, of course, you can control the hearing aids with the phone. They pair with the phone using Bluetooth LE, the low-energy Bluetooth, so they stay paired with the phone. And you can open up the app Starkey calls it TrueLink. There are other companies that do this, by the way, but Starkey calls it TrueLink. And the app opens up, and you can turn them down. You can shape the sound. But most usefully, it has the GPS of the phone, and you can say, when I go to this spot, whether it's the living room to watch TV or a theater to watch a movie or a restaurant, I want you to do this. And you can change the hearing profile. So, for instance, in a restaurant where there's a lot of noise and crowd noise and stuff, you may want to change the equalization on the hearing aids. You might want to change how loud they are.
Yeah.
And you can program that, and then it will automatically do it whenever you get near that spot again. So that's pretty cool.
Yes, it is. You mentioned about musicians. I assume maybe you have tinnitus.
I do.
Does the tinnitus canceling work very well? Some people say it doesn't, and other people say it does.
Mine do not do tinnitus canceling. I have looked into tinnitus canceling. There's an app that does this called Wist. And you might want to take a look at this app. I can't remember if it's a iPhone-only app. I have it on my iPhone, I think.
Okay.
Let me just look it up. It's from Sens, S-E-N-S dot com. It's not free, but this is based... So tinnitus is a ringing in your ears.
Right.
And it's really nerve damage. There's actually nothing going on. It's just your brain thinks it's hearing a high-pitched tone, which, by the way, is different for everyone. So this program, WHIST, W-H-I-S-T, which is on iOS, you actually go through a little hearing test to try to find the frequencies that you're hearing. Only you know this, by the way. They can't really even an audiologist can't measure this because there's no ringing really going on. You just think there is. You're perceiving it. And then what it does is it can create a white noise in the background that masks it.
Got it.
So for mine, the sound sounded like a shower, a rain shower, or I was in the shower. And when that was going on, I'd hear no ringing at all. Then they have, and this is where it gets a little bit more on the edge of research. I'm not saying research shows this is possible. You can apparently train your ear. You can get rid of the tinnitus, at least provide some short-term relief. I never found any long-term relief, but I did note the short-term relief. Using this, there's a training program using that custom-designed noise where you can supposedly reduce or, in some cases, eliminate it. It doesn't bother me that much. Actually, I guess they do have an Android version now. It doesn't bother me that much. They even have a Windows version. WHIST is from Sens, S-E-N-S.com. And I see no reason why a hearing aid couldn't do something kind of similar. The problem is... you hear the white noise, and so while the ringing has gone away, it's not good for watching TV. It would be only good if you're in a quiet room.
Right.
And in that case, by the way, one of the things that Starkey also does with the iPhone is it plays the audio, so it's a great way to listen surreptitiously to a book or perhaps play some white noise. The thing to understand about headphones that I was a little, or hearing aids rather, I was a little disappointed with is that they are not headphones. They're not full range. So they don't repair your hearing so that you hear music the way you used to. It's really designed to improve the your understanding of voices. So it's
right.
Very limited range. And the speakers are so tiny, if you think about it, it's not surprising. If you wanted to hear music right, you'd be better off using an app. Now, you have an Android phone. Samsung has a wonderful app on their phones called Adapt Sound, where you go through a hearing test, very similar to one you would go through with an audiologist using your earbuds, whatever you use your phone, and the phone, and then it will give you a custom curve that it will apply anytime you're listening to headphones, and that works remarkably well. That gives
great.
You full
okay.
full
you
audio
much.
Quality. I love that. So if you have a Galaxy phone, a Note 5, and a S6 or an S7, try the Adapt Sound. The Starkey hearing aids are the only ones I've used. At $6,000 a pair, I'm not likely to buy another. You know, it's not something you go out and try them all. But there are other companies that are making smart headphones. My audiologist, and you should really consult your audiologist. My audiologist told me that Starkey's were probably the most advanced to date. I'm very interested in hearables. That's the next stage where you've already got something in your ear. By the way, because of its proximity to blood flow in your ear, the membranes are very thin. It can also do things like measure blood oxygen, blood pressure, heart rate. And companies are now starting to look at ways to make these devices that are much more accurate than the smart wristbands that we wear and much more useful for diagnostics. So you may be a bionic man or a bionic woman. You put in one of these hearing aids in the next couple of years, you may have a real advantage. There's even a guy making
it. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. I appreciate the call. There's even a guy making a translator device. I think it's a Kickstarter right now. That you listen, you know, you're walking around with these little earbuds in. They're hearing French speakers all around you. You're hearing them speak in English. I think this is all very close to fruition. It's science fiction. It comes straight out of The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. They called it the Babel Fish. And it's, I think, close to actually happening. So I guess the bottom line on this is if you can afford hearing aids or if you can get insurance to pay for them, or if you could somehow get them, and the good ones are very kind of obscenely expensive, it really is worth doing. I'm going to pay for my mom's because it's hard, you know, for people to be around her. She has to turn up the TV so loud, and she can't really understand what they're saying. And you know, a lot of times what happens is you fake it, right? I do that. I pretend I understand what you said. And I'm nodding along to something. I have no idea what you're saying. It'd be nice to hear a little bit better. And the technology is really improving. It's very interesting to watch what's going on. And in a way, I guess that price perhaps is paying for all that R&D. Yeah, the ones I wear are the Starkey Halos, H-A-L-O-S. Those are designed to work with iOS and Android. They seem to work a little better with iOS, although I notice when a new version of iOS comes out, they stop working until Apple releases a driver for them. So I suspect that they work a little better because they're working with Apple to get some better integration. Back to the phones we go in a moment. 8888-ASK-LEO. But first, news at the top of the hour. Don't forget the website. We'll put links for all this stuff in there at techguylabs.com. Free to join. There's no joining. Free to visit. Enjoy it. And we'll be back right after this. Yeah, like a lot of people in my business, I lost my hearing because I turned... Well, partly from headphones, they're deadly. You listen louder, and it's a vicious circle because you turn them up and you can't hear as well when you turn them up. But I've always been careful about that. I think it was just sitting next to rock and roll speakers really loud. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers and the internet and home theater and digital photography and smartphones and smartwatches and virtual reality gear. Internet of Things, too. Anything with a chip in it. 8888-ASK-LEO is the phone number. 888-827-5536. That's toll-free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada outside that area. You can reach us still. Just use Skype out. 1-800-888. It's like an 800 number, but it's 888. I think we couldn't get 800-ASK-LEO. So it's 888-ASK-LEO. Back to the phones we go. Paul in Corona, California. Hello, Paul. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Oh, I enjoy listening to your show.
Thank you. I appreciate your listening.
Yeah, well, I've been listening a long time, but just the first time I've called.
Great.
My question is a difficult one. It has to do with an Android tablet with KitKat 4.4.2.
Mm-hmm.
The download directory, all the files that I download go to that directory, but there is apparently a number of files that apps can only see. And so I'm unable to transfer files, that more recent files, because the folder is pretty full, but my tablet's not full. The folder for the download is full, or it has a lot of apps in it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, not apps, but files that I've downloaded, mm-hmm. PDFs.
Mm-hmm.
And I can only read those PDFs by directly going into the download folder. I cannot see them from the file managers. Even the latest file manager.
You can. You're looking in the wrong place. So this is, by the way, one of the reasons that in later versions of Android, Google said, we got to get rid of these SD cards. It's confusing the heck out of people. There are very...
No, I
understand. I'm going to explain it to you. You're not looking in the right place, but it's a little confusing. In other words, there's more than one download folder on your Android. You have to look in... look in emulated... Zero is a folder, and in there you'll see a downloads folder. There are several of these. So what I'm saying is, I use the Astro file manager. Another one is ES file manager. Generally, third-party file managers are going to be a little more flexible. You're running an old enough version of Android, and that's good news, that you should be able to navigate completely. They change this in subsequent versions, Lollipop and Marshmallow, because... People, it was very confusing. It's still got this weird, confusing structure. So what you need to do is go all the way up to the top and look under MNT, and you'll see there is an emulated SD card. Even if there's no SD card, it's very weird. So in almost all Android installations I've ever seen, and I don't know if I have a KitKat running here. No, this is, I think this is Marshmallow. But almost all Android versions I've seen have at least two, and I wouldn't even bet against three download folders. So if you're looking in a folder, it's not that you're not seeing it. There aren't hidden files if you're using a decent file manager, it's that you're looking in the wrong download folder. So you gotta browse around a little bit more. I'm trying to open a file manager here. I guess I don't have one on this tablet, so I could tell you the... I don't remember the full directory structure, but move around and look under MNT. There's going to be a folder called Zero. There's an emulated folder. They're all over. It's all over the place. Basically, it was never designed for you to navigate around inside the file manager. And, you know, I'm sure there are reasons for why this is set up this way. It is a Linux operating system. And so some of it, if you've ever used Unix or Linux, will be familiar to you. The fact that there's an MNT folder, and inside that MNT folder, which stands for mount, there are mounted devices, will make sense to you. But why they put an emulated SD card in that MNT, I'm not sure I really understand it. Somebody will explain it to me. And this is, by the way, even if you don't have an SD card, there's also, if you look, there'll be an Android folder, and in there, there'll be a data folder, and in there, there'll be a download folder. So the bottom line, I understand what you're going through, because I've done this too. It's hard to find stuff, because it's kind of in weird places, and it depends also on which program you use. You know, different programs might have different download folders, so browse around is all I can say. I guess at some point I would love to find, and maybe there is somewhere, a description of the Android directory tree and where those two download folders are. Somebody in the Archandra in the chat room saying data media zero, and then within zero, you know, it's crazy. I don't really understand it. Somebody will call and tell us. Oh no, it's very simple. You see, what they've done is they've mounted an emulated file system underneath a root file system or something like that. It's there. Moa, Banning, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Moa.
Oh, yeah, I'm on the phone. Hold on.
Are you at a...
Yeah, I'm good.
Yeah, I hear you. I hear you. Get rid of those other people. It's just you and me now, Moa.
There's no way.
Moa. Yes. How do you spell that? Like Chandon? Like Moa et Chandon?
N-O-E.
M-O-E. Like Mo.
No, N is in Nancy.
No way.
O-E.
No way. Yes. Is it French or Hawaiian?
It's French also, and it's also Mexican for Noah.
Ah, no way. I like it. What can I do for you, Noah?
I bought my computer in Asus back in Black Friday of 2009.
Okay.
And for about the past 6 months, what it does all of a sudden, it just, this blue screen appears, says that the computer's going to shut down, or I forget, it says shut down or crash, whatever.
Yeah.
And it just shuts down.
What version of Windows are you running? Still running 7? Yeah.
And so I took it into Best Buy a week ago, and they said there's no viruses on it, you know, et cetera, et cetera. It's clean. There's nothing wrong with it. So, and then the CD driver is broken, so that doesn't work. So am I due for a new computer?
No, almost certainly not. It's just that these things kind of start to wear out. The first thing to go on any computer, and yours is 7 years old, is the hard drive. And when it goes out, it doesn't just die. It gets less reliable and stuff that starts to do things like that. If you think about it, it wouldn't be hard to create massive crashes if one of your key system files or a driver file just had one bit changed, one bit, if it's changed in the right place. And, of course, bits change all the time. Most of the time, it doesn't affect anything, but that one bit in that one key driver, bam, you got a blue screen of death. So the fix for this is pretty straightforward. I wouldn't necessarily replace your hard drive at this point. It might be enough just to replace Windows, to reinstall Windows. Frankly, this is something I do almost yearly. If I keep a computer that long, and one of the hazards of being in the business I'm in is that I'm always using new computers, but the computers I keep for a long time, like my home PC, stuff like that, I will rebuild probably twice, three times a year. It just makes it much more reliable. Now, so what you're going to do is back up any data that's on there. That means everything in your home directory. Look in the Documents and Settings folder on Windows, and inside there you'll see your login. Everything from that login down is your stuff. I would back up the whole thing. If you have multiple users on your system, maybe back up the whole documents and settings folder. You make a copy of it on an external hard drive and keep that around. Then get your Windows disks out, or if you don't have a Windows disk, your recovery disk, I hope you kept them. Unfortunately, a lot of computers are sold without them. Most of the time, they encourage you when you first get that computer, they say, oh, make some recovery disks. Although, I just got an HP, very nice HP laptop, never said make recovery disks. There is a HP recovery program on there. I ran it, and it was just like the old days. It said, you're going to get to do this once, so get it right. And it may, I made a recovery USB key, which is nice. More modern computers will do that, which you can use to reboot the computer and reinstall Windows. That's what you want to do. Then reinstall all your apps, restore your data, and I think things will be more reliable. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Tech Guy Podcast brought to you today by ZipRecruiter. We like to do ads for stuff we use, and this is one we've used, and it's great. The key to hiring, of course, is finding that perfect person. They're out there. But it's like a needle in a haystack, right? Because for every perfect future employee, there's a bunch of people who could take you down, man. You hire them, you'll be so sorry. And you got to sift through all of them and get to the right person. You got to go to the right job board, or, you know, you got to post it right where that person is that they're looking for it. I got a way to do it that's so easy. It's ZipRecruiter. You post once on ZipRecruiter. They post it to more than 100 other job boards. Plus all the social media networks like Facebook and Twitter and Craigslist and Google Plus, all with one click. So you got it all done. And now so you're reaching out to the most people possible. Any city, any industry, nationwide, everybody's going to see it. They even make it easy for, and I guess this is now the thing, a lot of young people, they don't have a computer. They do this all mobile. And they make it easy to apply mobily. They have a great mobile application. So ZipRecruiter's pages, and they're going to make a custom page for you and your job, look great any size screen. It's really cool. Now, you don't have to worry about a lot of phone calls or a lot of emails coming into your inbox because all of these candidates go into the ZipRecruiter interface. When they apply for your job, it goes into an interface that you have control of, only you see it, and you can easily, you know, screen the candidates, rank them, hire the right person fast. In fact, you're going to start getting applications almost immediately. So ZipRecruiter.com. Find out why more than 800,000 businesses now use ZipRecruiter. They have delivered more than 100 million candidate applications. That right person's out there. They're going to help you find her. ZipRecruiter.com/tech guy. You'll get it free for 4 days just because you went to that site. It's a good way to try. I think you find the right person in 4 days. And, you know, I know when you're a man down, a woman down, finding that person fast is important. ZipRecruiter.com/tech guy. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy, 8888 Ask Leo. Mabel in Glendale, California is next. Hi, Mabel.
Hey, Leo. How are you?
I'm guessing I'm not saying your name right either. Is it Mabil?
Yeah, that's correct.
With an N?
With an N.
Nabil. So, I'm sorry, but it's not my fault. Kim spelled it M-A-B-I-L. Mabel, right? Nabil, how are you? Welcome.
Thank you. I love the show. Thanks for taking
Thanks for listening. I think we've talked before, actually. I remember your name now.
Yeah, we did.
What can I do for you?
So, I have an app question for you.
Sure.
I've been looking for an app that would help me search for products at stores instead of having to call them and ask them if they have a certain product.
What a good idea.
Yeah.
Because I hate calling them. You call Toys R Us, they put the phone down, and 10 minutes later they come back and say, no, we don't have it. And you can just see the poor guy's like searching for something on the aisles. There should be. Nowadays, everybody's got digital inventory. They should know exactly what's in stock.
Yeah, so when I do a Google search for a specific product, I only find, you know, where I could purchase it online, but I want to know if stores around me have it.
Yeah. You know? Boy, that's an interesting question, Nabil. I have a theory, though. You, because I know you're a smart guy, are thinking of writing an app that does this, and you're just trying to find out if anybody else has written that app yet.
Exactly. Yeah.
Did I get it?
Yep, you did.
Wow. Usually my intuitions are 100% wrong. Yeah, no, I think that'd be a great app. Of course, the challenge of this is going to be interfacing to these inventory systems.
Yeah.
And my guess is that some companies are going to be resistant to it because they kind of want people to come in and buy something else if they don't have that thing in stock, right? Let's take as an example, I don't know, a Hasbro Chewbacca laughing mask that when you put it on, the jaw moves and it goes in Chewbacca's voice. Let's just talk about that. Now, this was a very popular item last week because of Chewbacca Mom. And pretty much every Kohl's I went to was out of stock. And if you go to the Kohl's website, they say out of stock. But I bet you there are places that had a couple in the back there. And wouldn't your app be great if it knew?
Mm-hmm.
There was, when I don't know if this still happens. When iPhones were scarce and other Apple products, iPads, there were a couple of people who would make websites that would say where how many were in stock and where you could find them. And I think that these guys were either scraping Apple's site or more likely calling the stores. It's going to be a hard thing to do. But boy, it would be a useful thing, wouldn't it? And then build in Project Tango, Google's new Project Tango, which tells you where you are in the store. It's a GPS for indoors for a store. And the Chewbacca mask down this aisle to the left, to the right, and there it is. Wouldn't that be great?
Yeah, I would think that you'd be able to, just see what that store has ordered, in the past.
You would think. Yeah. But why is it when I call Toys R Us, the guy has to put the phone down and search? Don't they have like an online database of what they have?
Yeah, invoices.
Yeah, you would think. this is Nabil. I will buy this program at any price. You make it, I will buy it. Have you written mobile apps before?
No, never.
You're looking for that great project, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm sure I could hire someone to do it, right?
Absolutely. In fact, that's the way these days a lot of this gets done is people hire programmers often in Central Europe or Russia. I had a guy give me a name of a great Russian programmer, wrote a mobile app for him for $5,000. And I just paid $60,000 for a mobile app. And I said, thanks. Wish he'd given this to me a year ago. He was very happy with the guy. But the problem is there's also bad, people charge you a lot and give you nothing. So you got to find the right people. So ask for references and so forth. But you're absolutely right. You can find great programmers who will implement your ideas. And you're doing what you need to do, which is the market research. I could see the problems, though. You're going to have to solve them. But isn't that when you make the most money? Ryan in South Dakota. Hey, Ryan. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hello.
Hey, Ryan.
Yes, how's it going, Leo?
It's going great. What can I do for you?
I got a question on Google Maps.
Mm-hmm.
What I like to do is print out maps and put them together myself, like a great big map, maybe 60 inches by 50 inches.
They're gorgeous maps, aren't they?
Yeah, they sure are. And yeah. I'd like to... Then I got some ancient places I'd like to fill in for educational purposes.
Ah, are you a teacher?
Not really. I'm putting it together for a teacher.
That's a great idea. So you want to take Google Maps, take the image data, and customize it. Now, of course, Google, if you use this for commercial purposes, gets a little bit upset. You have to pay for it. CNN, when you see Google Maps or Google Earth on CNN, they pay for it. But if this is for a non-commercial use, no problem. The key is you got to become a developer. There's an API that allows you to tell Google Maps, this is the image I want, this is the stuff I want to add. I'm going to put a link in our show notes at techguylabs.com. Totally doable, but you have to do it by writing some JavaScript. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. In fact, they have, it's nice, online, a tutorial for customizing Google Maps. It's a kind of a class, and they're going to have you make a custom map, a university campus map, customize the look and feel of the map, add custom markers, custom legends, all of the stuff you wanted to do. And it's actually a fairly simple thing to do. But you can't – you and in fact, if you think about it, you don't want to just take a screen capture of the map. What you read – because that's not going to scale well and blah, blah, blah. But the good news is Google has an API that lets you do this. So what you want to do is go to the Google Maps API home. There's a great page for Google Maps. developers.google.com/maps and take a look. And I think it's free for non, but you should look at the pricing and stuff. I think it's free for non-commercial. If you were a realtor, you know, or doing something like that, they would want you to pay for it. Very complete API. It's a JavaScript API. So you basically say, here's the coordinates, here's what I want, and then you style it. You can even get satellite imagery and all that stuff. So it'd be really great for a teacher. Let's see. Brian in Santa Ana, you're next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Brian.
Hi, Leo. Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for the call. What can I do for you?
Well, you know, I get these four emails I'm subscribed to from this one website. And recently I subscribed to a new one, making it the fourth. And when I open that particular email, it displays correctly for a second and then blows up to like 300%.
That's not good.
Yeah,
I would contact the company and say there's something wrong with your HTML, dude.
Yeah, would that be the thing to do? It wouldn't be my computer, right? Because the other ones display fine.
Yeah, I think it's yeah. So the way they make these emails, when you see, you know, fancy emails with images and fonts and graphics, is they're really a web page. They're sending you the HTML code that you would put on a web page, and most email clients will render them just as they would render a web page, often using the same engine. They'll, you know, on Windows, they use the Internet Explorer engine to render it. On Macintoshes, they use the Safari engine. So, in effect, the email becomes a window onto a web page. And, of course, if there's something wrong in the HTML code, it could do that. probably not your fault. Are Windows or Mac?
It's Windows 7.
Windows 7. All right. So it's Internet Explorer doing the rendering.
It's Office Outlook 2010.
Yeah. Outlook might use – I'm wondering if Outlook uses IE or uses a built-in engine, maybe the engine that it comes with.
I think it uses Word.
Yeah, Word has its own renderer. So it could be a compatibility problem there. Sometimes those emails will have a link in them that says, if this page does not render properly in your email, click this link to see it in a browser. That would be one way to check. If you can, it's 300 times bigger. You might not.
If I do that, it displays fine.
Ah, so you have tried that. So the browser renders it properly.
Yeah.
Huh. And then the other emails still look okay. Just that one email.
Yeah. Just that one. And I'm wondering, is there a way to take the HTML that's in that email and look at it in an editor?
Sure is. Easiest way to do it would be to do that, open in browser. And most browsers have a view source command. Sometimes it's in a hidden developer's menu. But IE, I think it was right there in the menus. You want to view the source, and that'll show you the HTML. On some browsers, Chrome, for instance, if you press a function key, I think it's F3, will show you the Explorer that will show you the source code. But, yeah, almost all browsers will let you look at the underlying HTML. That would be one way. It'd be fun, too, because you'd learn a little bit about how HTML works. That'd be one way to verify it. If there is something blowing it up, it's interesting. It looks normal at first, and then at the end it loads. It jumps up in size. Is that right?
Yeah, it's like it's connecting to some website and then changing the format.
So what that means is that whatever's causing this problem is at the end of the code, because it loads it sequentially and does basically HTML is just a bunch of instructions to the computer. Here's how you display this. And it's displaying it normally, going along just fine, and all of a sudden, boom, that means there's probably an instruction right at the end there. That's doing it. Interesting. Interesting.
Right, there's no way to edit the HTML.
Well, sure there is. Once you're viewing this...
Well, it's in the email, though, I mean. While it's displaying...
There might be if you look. I don't know in Outlook. I bet you there's a view source somewhere in there in the Outlook to see what it looks like. You can view the headers and stuff. Okay. Yeah.
The other thing I wanted to ask you is, you know, in Windows 10, when you click on the Start menu, it displays all your programs in little squares.
Yeah.
Well. Is there a setting in Windows 10 that you can do a detailed list form instead of squares?
Sure. The File Explorer that you're using has a button that changes it from you're looking at the grid. There are I think 4 or 5 different ways to view any window on a folder. One of them is what we call detail view, where you see the name, lots more information about it. You can even sort it. So, absolutely, I would take a look at that. It's weird that email is messed up. I think it's probably messed up at the source. And you know what? It'll probably get better because you won't be the only one having a weird problem. Also, thanks to somebody in our chat room who suggests there is a way to edit maps. This is very cool. In the browser, you don't have to know JavaScript. And I never knew about this. If you go to google.com/maps/D... There's an actual map editor that allows you to modify the maps without add a drawing layer, importing data, change the base map. That's really cool. They have a variety of tools. You can change the scale. You can add directions. You can draw lines, add routes. So this is really intended for you to take Google Maps and modify it. Not sure how it would print out, but it's certainly something you could play with. So, great. Thank you, chat room. Thank you for that tip, and thank you, Macro. google.com/maps/D. google.com/maps/D. Moving on to Nikki in Los Angeles. Hi, Nikki.
Hello. You are invaluable, Leo.
Thank you.
I've been listening to you for quite a while, but first time calling. I've learned a lot, but not enough. I've been operating on the HP touchscreen all-in-one Windows Vista, and now it's becoming obsolete, and it's been getting slower. And the other day, I went, and all of a sudden, I saw something nested at the bottom, not to the left where you would nest your open files or whatever, but to the right where you would have, you know, your task window.
And
your sound and all that.
Yeah.
I saw something that was 4 capital letters, and shame on me for not writing it down at the time, but one panics when they see this because it said .exe. And I said, what the heck is this?
Why is it saying .exe?
Yeah.
Why is .exe in my system tray? Well, so that system tray holds icons for programs that are running. And usually they're informational, like if you hover over them. But I don't know what it means when you see a .exe. Anybody in the chat room ever seen this? A .exe in your system tray could be an error. It's not something to panic about, for sure.
Well, it is now because...
Uh-oh.
After that happened, I was able to, the computer appeared frozen, but it wasn't frozen because the mouse still worked, only I couldn't click on anything, so I couldn't shut it down properly. So after waiting and waiting and waiting, I finally pushed the button, overwrote it, shut it down, and I had just installed updates, so it came back up, and then it shut itself down again and rebooted again.
We're running out of time. Really? Hang on. I'll have to help you after the break. Actually, let me talk to you during the break. That might be the best.
Yeah.
Stand by. Yeah. I don't know what you're talking about, Jono. Start menu? No, he was talking about an email. That was confusing. Anyway, I'm sorry, Nikki. I'm back, and we're in the break, but this is still part of the podcast, so there are still people listening. So you saw, and then it rebooted, or you rebooted, and then it installed some more stuff, or
it wouldn't let me click on anything, so I had to override it and shut it down again to bring it back up. And now everything was there, but now finally I can click on things to shut it down the proper way now using the start menu. Only there's nothing on my desktop, there's nothing in my start menu, and I've got a pop-up saying I have security issues, my ESET is not in my startup menu, my Defender wouldn't load, there's nothing there, and there's this pop-up, I forget what it said because I shut the computer down again. So now I'm looking at new laptops, which was the second question.
That's the real question. I want to throw this thing out. Well, it is time. That's a pretty old system.
And you had mentioned something last week about uninstalling QuickTime because there was some...
Yeah, Apple says we're not going to fix QuickTime anymore, and it has several known flaws. You don't have to uninstall it. Just make sure it doesn't launch when you're browsing the internet.
Because I had a pop-up for that to update that too, and I just ignored it because it freezes my system when it's there and I don't want to deal with it. And the only thing is, how do I play my videos from my iPhone if I don't have QuickTime? That's the only reason I installed it, because I really don't like it.
Yeah. There are other video players. One I recommend is VideoLand Client, or VLC. You can get that at videoland.org. That's free. And you should uninstall QuickTime. Well, you can still use it to play back videos from your phone. That's fine. It's what the danger is, that you go to a website that has maliciously crafted videos that launch. You know, a lot of time you go to a website, video runs. If it's video that launches QuickTime and it's intentionally, you know, modified to infect you, you can get in trouble. So it's fine if it was something on your phone, you probably made it yourself, and you copied it over with iTunes. It's fine to keep using QuickTime for that. I would update it.
Actually, I just installed my phone directly into the computer. I've never used iTunes.
How do you just copy? You just use the phone? Yeah. You just load the.
I just plug it in and it goes.
Yeah. It copies of the videos over. That's fine. That's harmless. It's you don't want the browser to launch with QuickTime running, and I'm not sure if there's a way to do that.
I want to make sure when I get the new laptop that I don't do anything wrong to it. And No.
You'll be fine. Yeah.
I don't know how you do that.
No, your new laptop, just don't install QuickTime. And probably those videos will continue to play just fine. And if they don't, there is a program that's safe and easy and free called VLC that you can download. But I think Windows will play them just fine. Windows can play QuickTime movies without help.
Also, with the old computer, I have one external that's always plugged in that I back up to, and then I have other ones that I don't keep plugged into that I back up beyond there.
Good.
That and my thumb drive were in, and I'm wondering if it got infected, if those might now be fouled.
Could be. Just depends on the infection. You think you have an infection? That's what that EXE is?
Well, I don't know. I mean, isn't that something trying to execute itself?
No, I don't know what that is. That's a program, something doing the wrong thing. It doesn't necessarily... All programs are EXEs.
Mm-hmm.
That's not necessarily a virus. And that was your concern? Yeah.
Well, yeah, because there's nothing's launching now in the pop.
I have to run. Hold on, okay? I got to do something. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. And little James Brown. Good God. Here he is, ladies and gentlemen. He's the hardest working man in Disneyland. Dick DiBartolo.
Yeah, that's true.
Matt, he's the only guy in Disneyland. Gizneyland. Gizneyland is not Disneyland. It's the Gizwiz's home.
Not.
Nope. And Dickie G joins us every week to talk about gizmos and gadgets. Chat room saying that I misunderstood one of our callers. He was asking about, I thought, File Explorer and viewing it. But he was talking about his start menu, right? He wanted to have the start menu, instead of showing tiles, show information. You can't do that in Windows, although they say that there is a program from, we love them, StarDock, called Start 8, that will do that. So,
oh, yeah, he's that.
Yes, or Start 10, I guess, if you're on Windows 10.
Yeah.
Yep. Stardock.com. They're good. I like them.
Thanks
so,
to
Dickie
you.
D, how- you know about it.
Yeah. Well, Leo, I have a brand new gadget, but I remembered this is a 12-year-old gadget I'm going to start with.
Okay.
It's at Dick's Gadget Warehouse, and it really plays Memorial Day weekend, and I always forget about it. But I did not forget about a 12-year-old gadget called the Wave Stars and Stripes, the self-waving American flag.
Because it's so hard to wave an American flag.
No, it waves electronically.
And it plays march music.
Yes, there are little wires that run all through the flag.
That's not creepy at all.
So that it, you don't need the wind, you don't need anything.
That's
it just
great.
Plays.
Are you
going to
put that on your
desk.
Stoop? Put that on your front stoop.
I think I will.
That's
I
a good test. If a gadget's really great, it'll get stolen.
No, that's
if it's
good.
Not so hot, it'll be there the next day.
Yeah.
My
okay,
guess
yeah.
is that wave self-waving flag will be there the next day.
For another 12 years.
You never know about Manhattan, though. Somebody might find some value. Anyway, exactly. Good. You can't buy that anymore. It's 12 years old. So
12 years old.
Yeah.
Okay. So at the hardware show, I thought about you because I don't have a barbecue, but I saw the Prestige Pro, the new 665.
Yeah.
And this has your name on it, unless you already own one. Okay. You can cook 42 burgers at one time.
Oh, I need it. We got a big barbecue coming up tomorrow.
1,140 square inches of cooking area.
What the heck?
Eight burners.
What the heck?
A ceramic side burner that heats to 1,800 degrees in 30 seconds.
What the what?
There's also a sideboard that has an ice chest.
What, it's a kitchen on wheels.
It's great. And then what attracted me to it, it has this great blue tech backlighting for nighttime barbecuing.
There isn't enough room in your backyard for this thing, though.
No. Leo, I could move into this. I mean, in New York City, it's an apartment.
Yeah. It's a bigger kitchen than most people have in Manhattan.
Yeah, it's NapoleonGrills.com. And this guy is all stainless steel. It's on the pricey side. It's $3,000.
Wow.
But
what do they call this? The Grillmaster 9000?
This is the Pro 665.
The Pro 665. It's a gas grill, I presume. You wouldn't have there's not enough charcoal in the world to heat this thing up.
You know what? It's a gas grill, but if you want, there's also a drop-in bin if you decide you also want one section of it to be a barbecue. There you go.
Wow.
Does that not say twit? I think it says twit, those little letters.
It says twit.
Actually.
It is. That is a manly grill.
Yeah.
That is something I'd be very, very proud to own.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There you go.
Over. Play with wait a minute. 99,000 BTUs. The thing has 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 knobs on the front.
Yeah. Well, one of the knobs is a secret chamber that you put the... what is it when you want to flavor the meat? You put in wood chips.
What is it when you want to flavor the meat? I don't know.
You want to give it some sort of a flavor.
It tastes like meat. What do you...
No, there are people who put in chips.
Oh, you're smoking chips. Yeah, you put chips in there. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. So they made the hickory chip smoker chute make it look like another knob.
Wow.
So it didn't destroy the aesthetics of the front of the grill.
As you said on the Gizwiz, that is a chick magnet.
Yeah.
Well, but if the chicks came, you'd probably grill them up. So let's.
I'm doing the best I can, just trying to get people with my flag. But I think you can have the barbecue.
It's not a grill; it's a Napoleon, ladies and gentlemen, for Memorial Day. Dick DiBartolo, Mads Maddest writer, our Gizwiz. He joins us every week with crazy gadgets. Now I want this grill. I want this.
I figured you would. I actually figured he probably has it, but
I cook the old fashioned way with charcoal.
Oh,
yeah. Then you don't have to flavor the meat. It tastes like smoke, like burn.
Oh, okay.
It tastes like charcoal.
Well, I don't know why you just don't use the new way and then have to add flavor later.
Add flavor later. Gizwiz.biz is his website, G-I-Z-W-I-Z.biz. That's where you can play the What the Heck Is It contest for a chance to win an autographed copy of Mad Magazine. And don't forget Gizwiz.tv for his podcast. He does that with the OMG Chat, and it's a great show. Gizwiz.tv. Nominated, I'm proud to say, I don't know why I'm proud. I have nothing to do with it. For the best tech podcast.
Well, thank you. It's because you're a generous person.
Yeah, I said, here, take this. Get it out of here.
Get it out of here.
I'm very generous.
But stop back on Saturday.
Thank you, Dickie D.
Okay,
have a great Memorial Day weekend, and good luck with your Napoleon Pro 665 with infrared rear. We were talking before the break, and I don't want to give up on Nikki. She thinks she's got maybe a virus, because all of a sudden in her system tray pops up the word EXE, which is short for executable. Almost all Windows programs are EXEs. That sounds like a bug, not a virus. That sounds like something misbehaved. But then your machine's flaky, right?
It's getting older.
And you decided, you know, it's a Vista machine. Maybe it's time for a nice new Windows 10 machine. Now, what do you do with your computer? I might try to talk you out of this. What do you do with your computer?
For processing and editing photos and running an online store.
Ah, okay. And that's on a website, so you could do that with a browser, right?
Right.
Yeah. Photo processing, that's a little harder to do. I'm thinking, here's why I'm saying this. I'm thinking a Chromebook might be a good
thing. Chromebook, I know.
Yeah. Well, most people would be very happy with a Chromebook. They cost less. They're much more reliable. You never have to worry about viruses, ever. And so all of this kind of fear and worry that you've had over the last couple of days because of this just goes away. The question is, can I do everything I need to do? And what program do you use for your photo editing?
Thank God I haven't installed Photoshop or anything on here. I was using GIMP, and I also use an
GIMP, really?
Online. I actually use an online browser one called PicMonkey.
Perfect.
I tried to text that information to you on a previous show, and it didn't go through.
PicMonkey would work great on a Chromebook.
Mm-hmm.
So the only thing, you couldn't run the GIMP. The GIMP is a great free open source Photoshop clone. Very hard to use. I'm impressed that you're good with it.
I'm not good with it yet. But I figure it out when I need to.
So if you can use the GIMP, there's one other option, which is to get Linux, download with your flaky machine Ubuntu, put it on your Vista machine, wipe out Windows. You'll have many of the benefits of a Chromebook. You'll still be able to run GIMP. In fact, most Linux operating systems come with GIMP. And, of course, you can download the Chrome browser on there. So you can do everything you do, and you'd be doing it in a much safer environment. And it's free. Certainly worth a try before you run out and get a new computer, because Linux often runs very well on older computers. Ubuntu. And there's a version X Ubuntu that is specifically designed for older machines. That might even be a better one. That's also at the website. Xubuntu. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy Show for today. Thank you so much for being here. And don't forget, it's just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows on the Netcast Network. It's called TWIT, T-W-I-T. It stands for This Week in Tech, and you'll find it at twit.tv, including the podcasts for this show. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches on iOS Today, security on Security Now. I mean, I can go on and on and on. You even get your daily dose of tech news with Tech News Today. And, of course, the big show every Sunday afternoon, This Week in Tech. You'll find it all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next week with another great Tech Guy show. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time.